Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Hulu is now serving up Secret Chef, a quite surreal take on cookery games where a talking hat dictates the action, and we kid you not. Executive producer and showrunner Patrick Duty joins me next. Popular design TV host Genevieve Gorder is back on the tube, thanks to new Crackle series At Home with Genevieve, presented by PetSmart. Gorder will carve out the first hour. She'll round it out after the bottom of the hour. The latest daytime series to get a national run in syndication is Lifestyle Live. More than 20 stations premiered the award-winning venture from WISH-TV in Indianapolis last week. We will check in with executive producer Payne McClellan next hour. And we'll close our last episode of June 2023 and the first half of the year with David Shane, the creator of Droidin, among the TV series pilots unveiled at the recent Tribeca Festival here in New York. Also ahead, Down to the Wire, or an extension with the actors' unions and TV producers, ESPN on-air talent dropped their mics permanently. We have the latest details, our classic trivia question, and takeaway of first half 2023, plus tributes to the TV work of actor Alan Alda and TV critic Marvin Kittman. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, and present the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Odyssey, Apple and Google Podcasts, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you for joining us on this Friday afternoon, last day of June, last day of the first half of 2023, for the latest edition of the program all about TV's current and future. We have a lot to get today. We're delighted to have you with us. Stay with us for the full 2 hours. I think you'll be well rewarded. Great guests all the way. And we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. All you have to do is pick up the phone, make a call with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. And if you're shy about the phone, use our chat room to get through. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the promo's on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Find the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. LTV Live with you. 82 degrees, top of the hour here in New York. And Patrick Duty, the executive producer and showrunner of the new Hulu series Secret Chef, will join us from Los Angeles after these news notes. The crusade to fashion a new multi-year contract with actors union SAG and AFTRA and the Alliance of TV and Film Producers continues at this hour. Negotiation meetings are in progress, attempting a deal before midnight tonight when the current pact expires. A news blackout on the state of negotiations remains in effect. However, several union representatives are telling entertainment news outlets there's a good prognosis of extending the talks into this weekend and maybe beyond July 4th if a deal is close. ESPN reduced its on-air talent roster by 20 people today. Most of the talent shown the exit after years in various ESPN attractions were analysts and commentators, including lead NBA game analyst Jeff Van Gundy, NBA countdown commentator Jalen Rose, and NFL programming personality Keyshawn Johnson. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio's morning show simulcast on ESPN2 and ESPNU, also was terminated today, with co-host and This Just In host Max Kellerman gone, and Jay Williams' future with both ESPN Radio and TV unclear. And in the last 45 minutes, we have also learned that Monday Night Countdown host Susie Colbert, Monday Night Countdown commentator Steve Young, and college basketball studio and game analyst Alfonso Ellis are also gone. Susie Colbert, by the way, has been with ESPN for more than a quarter century as a Sports Center anchor, doing reports for Sunday NFL Countdown, and then in recent years, the host of Monday NFL Countdown. I will probably have more to say about the ESPN situation next week on Sports Newswire on Sports Grid Network, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. An Emmy-nominated and Oscar-winning actor, Alan Alda, has passed away. He was 89 and lived in California. Details of what led to his death were not released. I'll have more thoughts on Mark Arkin's film, and formidable, I should say, formidable TV resume, and a celebration to TV critic Marvin Kittman, whose life ended yesterday at age 93 from cancer, later in today's episode. And we'll have a roundup of News Note quickies at the top of the next hour. And now joining us live from Los Angeles, the executive producer and showrunner of Hulu's new effort into culinary cooking, organized by David Chang, Secret Chef, premiered yesterday. Pleasure to welcome from Los Angeles, Patrick Duty. Patrick, welcome in.
Simon, how's it going?
Very, very fine, thank you. Like you heard, we have a lot of news that's breaking all over the place today.
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy day, and here we are with the launch of a new show.
And tell us about that launch, because it certainly is one of the more unique, offbeat, like I said at the tag, surreal cooking shows to come along in quite a while.
Yeah, it's definitely a little different. I mean, look, we took some big swings for this show when I got involved, you know, the premise of having chefs individually cooking and individually tasting in secret so that the taste would be blind and totally unfettered. Or unfiltered, rather, was part of the pitch. And then, you know, we came in and we started adding all the sort of fun and, as you say, surreal elements, like the location and the, you know, there were always conveyor belts, so that was the fun part of it. And then, of course, the sort of chefy filter that we added. So, it was a really crazy time. And the fact that anybody kind of let us do some of the stuff we did was very exciting as a creative mind. We had a great time putting it together.
How long did it take first for David Chang to come up with the show, and then once you got involved as executive producer and showrunner to refine it to what we saw starting yesterday on Hulu?
You know, I think from what I could gather, because, of course, everything, once you get a showrunner involved, it all moves pretty fast. But I think that David and the team had had the idea for a little while, and, you know, they just had presented it to Hulu. Hulu really wanted to make it, and then, you know, they refined it to where it was the real foundation of what the show you see is, and then you know, they had seen Nailed It, I've been on this program with you before to talk about. And they just thought, hey, maybe the Nailed It guy can bring some kind of sense of humor to the show, since it already is kind of a little weird and offbeat. And so by the time I got involved, we were shooting in about 10 weeks or so, and the entire show took us about one full year. We literally finished shooting that show a year ago, almost this weekend, if you can imagine that.
Mm-hmm. There certainly is a lot of clandestine elements to this show. So let's take them one by one first, Patrick. One is where they are doing this. I understand this is like an underground bunker or underground kitchen bunker.
Yes, it's like basically this sort of secret underground kitchen. That has a individual kitchens all connected by a series of conveyor belts, and it's ripe for a fun way to do cooking challenges where you can utilize the conveyor belt to the advantage of, I guess in some ways, the disadvantage to the chefs, where you can send things in, send things out, and then they have no idea when food arrives who sent them the food, where it comes from, so they're not seeing anybody hand it to them. So we utilize that element of it being like a secret location. And then we designed it to kind of look a little bit like, and, you know, just sort of like a fun, cool underground lounge with a lot of fun game elements and, you know, sort of, you know, mid-century elements and then, you know, Atari elements and, you know, game board elements and video game elements. We kind of threw this whole sort of fun game look to the entire show just to make it feel even more fun. Like, it'd be a place you'd want to go to and hang out and cook, or just hang out and play Burger Time on the television.
Is this like a Big Brother type of set or format where once you get into this underground kitchen, you don't go out unless you're limited?
Yeah, that's correct. Basically, everybody is in this space. I mean, they obviously, you know, you never see them live there, but they are in there. And we've had people ask, why are they wearing the same clothes? Well, it's because they're basically in the space for the entire time. Until they have to exit from the space. And that exiting is determined only by the people that are there. So there is no judges on the outside. There's no hands of producers. It is literally a mathematical rating system that is heavily monitored. So when someone's dish is not rated as high as the others, it is rated specifically by just the chefs that are in that secret facility.
Mm-hmm. And how does this conveyor belt system work? Did it take a lot of effort to come up with the system where, A, you set up the belts all over the place, and, B, determining what food goes on that belt and where they go?
It's a great question. It was actually an extremely laborious and very sort of bang-your-head-against-the-wall process to figure it all out. First of all, we had to find almost 15 or so working conveyor belts that were the right height and size. And then we had to get them all connected to one another so that you could pass food through one, like it could come through the other one, so that it was all very fluid. So our set designer, Dave Edwards, who is incredible, who's done Love is Blind, you know, he and the art director found these conveyor belts. We had them custom built for our space, and off we go. And then we had to figure out, like, the right speed so that the food wouldn't fall off of it when we sent it around. And also so that you could send one down and it could just come up right when we needed it to come up. So it was, it was a hell of a process, but it was great. I mean, the first day we tested it when we weren't sure it was going to work, we're all watching on the camera and we see this conveyor belt work and the golden cloches come rolling in and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. It really works. And it was really fun. And it was fun to use. Once we got it down, it worked.
Secret Chef is the new Hulu cooking show designed by David Chang and executive produced and show run by our first guest this half hour, Patrick Duty. He joins us live from Los Angeles. You can catch Secret Chef, of course, on Hulu, which is available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. And David and Patrick is with us live from L.A. right here, beginning of a big two-hour edition to wrap up June and the first half of 2023 right here live on Tomorrow Be Televised. Time to have on with you from the other side of the U.S. of A. in Nueva York, where it is now 82 degrees at the top of the hour. So give us a call. I want to hear from you. Number is 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name, to communicate. We will be starting July in the second half of 2023 in grand fashion next week. We'll have three episodes for you back to back to back. That's July 5th, 6th, and 7th. We have a great hour in store for you on July 5th. And first guest, excuse me, just got my Adam's apple tied a little bit here. Now it's untied.
Right there.
Coming your way on our first episode on July 5th of the week, we will have Nate Dapper. He is the producer and director, one of the producer and directors of the new PBS series Human Footprints that premieres that night on many PBS stations around the country. Also, we'll give you a preview of a new network called Manza with its co-founder Zach Tannenloff. That's coming your way Wednesday, July 5th, day after Independence Day, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Now, Patrick, let's talk about this animated host. Who came up with that, and how did you make that happen?
Again, fantastic question. I'm glad we have a two-hour show. So the animated host was basically came out of the internal team's idea. So this show was produced by Spoke TV, which is part of a larger company, Wheelhouse. And so when the pitch had come to me, there was no host in the show. And so when we were developing the show a couple weeks before we shot, we just sat around and realized that, like, well, how were we going to give them challenge information? Like, you would normally have a host come out and say, today you're doing this, today you're going to do that. And so, you know, there's a lot of ways you could do it. It could be through a speaker. It could be through notes. Obviously, we had these conveyor belts. And I thought, well, sending the notes after a while might get a little cumbersome and tedious. I've been very obsessed for a very long time with food mascots. Right now, obviously, Grimace being a very popular food mascot who's making a comeback in a big way. And so I love the history of food mascots. So I just actually drew a talking chef's hat. And what's really funny is I was like, there's no way they're going to say yes to this. And I actually have no idea how we're going to do it. So we're going to put it in a pitch to everybody at Hulu and at Wheelhouse and just have them say no and then I don't have to worry about it. And then, we put in the pitch deck and then they were like, we really like the Sheffy. Can you figure out how to do it? And so then we were really on the hook to figure it out. So that was part one. And then part two was the animation of how to make the character work. Well, animation is very expensive and we couldn't do this like a traditional animation where we would do the whole show and then later on someone would animate it, you know, by hand or by computer later on. So we worked with an incredible animation studio named Pipsqueak, and we also work with Adobe. They have a live motion capture software called Character Animator. And you actually can get in front of your computer, and you can build a puppet, and then you can make that puppet work right in front of your computer. So when you watch the show and you see Sheffy, that is a puppeted motion capture character. And then at the end, when it was all finalized and edited together, we brought in an actress named Arden Marin, who is an incredible comedian, to voice the character. And those were the sort of three elements that made Sheffy work. It took a lot of figuring out to get it out to the stage and all those televisions, but that's the basic premise of how we put that together.
Who knows? You may have forwarded a new era of live action. There's a lot of efforts going on now with live action animation. Disney did it with the NHL game that was carried on ESPN and was simulcast on Disney Channel and Disney Plus and other places where the animation was live, showing a hockey rink or a hockey stadium with the actual hockey players presented with the puck and so on and so forth. So it looks like we're going to see more and more of this idea of live animation. And maybe artificial intelligence, generative AI may play a role in that.
Well, that's funny because obviously that's a really hot button topic right now all over the world. And so we came up with this more over a year ago, not realizing that we would end up sort of in the middle of the whole AI conversation. And obviously Sheffy is meant to be AI in tone and style and supposed to be this kind of wayward sort of sassy program that's living inside this facility running it all these years. I mean, there's a whole backstory to Sheffy that is sort of just how we developed the character. But the technology of putting it together was very satisfying and a lot of fun. And everybody who helped make it a reality really put a lot of time and effort into making it. So you could actually have your chefs out in that lounge of the kitchen, of the cooking facility where they're in the lounge, and Sheffy could, we could have Sheffy interact with them and talk to them and stuff. So instead of it just being like a pre-programmed thing, Sheffy would actually respond back to them. And I think they weren't sure that was the case until they started talking to Sheffy on the first day. And we thought they're going to just probably turn around and walk away and go, this is too silly. But they really embraced the character and actually started having full-on conversations, whether it was laughing or arguing or whatever it was. And that was really hilarious, actually.
And we should also point out the idea of the live action. I mean, we should point out Nickelodeon's efforts with the NFL on their playoff games and the Christmas Day game last year, where they did some live action animation involving the Patrick Starr character. In terms of the chefs themselves, what were you trying to strike a balance with? Because I understand there's a mix of professional chefs, there's a mix of home chefs, and even people who are social media mavens who are into culinary skills.
Yeah, the sort of TikTokers, right? So because the nature of the format lends itself to being the food is what's the most important thing, so it doesn't matter who cooks it, whether they come from like a Zagat-rated restaurant or they're a five-star chef or they are a home cook or someone online, they all have certain skill set that makes just good food. And ultimately, isn't that what the sort of the point of good food is? And so many times on cooking shows, and again, this is not to say those cooking shows don't make sense, but like a lot of times the chefs will play to the judges' strengths or weaknesses or their emotions or whatever. Here, you had no ability to play to anybody based on who you were as a personality. Everything was rated on the food. So if you and I were competing, and we were mortal enemies out in the game world, but inside, you and I were rating our food very high because we thought the food was good. That's what made the games very compelling. So we wanted to show that, like, you know, home cooks are as good as, you know, five-star chefs, could be as good as TikTok chefs. And I don't want to give anything away, but you watch the show and you realize that, you know, it does matter just how you cook food, regardless of what your background or training is. And also, that if you're a really skilled chef, you could make a misstep. They can all make missteps. It happens all the time. And so you see that absolutely in the show. And it was also very gratifying when we did that because, you know, we have no idea if that's going to work when we cast these people. We have no idea if the whole format's going to work. But for those of you who stay with all 10 episodes, you see that how great it's very satisfying to see how it actually does work. And that was very exciting.
When all 10 of these chefs got into this unique environment, did, let's say, the professional chefs react one way versus the home cooks versus the TikTok people?
I think some of them were very intimidated because in the very first episode, we actually made them cook all together so they could see what they were up against. And, you know, in that very first episode, one of our TikTokers, who is not known to be a TikToker amongst the group of chefs, they don't know who these people are. They just know they're all here to compete. She witnesses a very skilled chef, you know, slice up leeks or slice of garlic or something. And his knife skills are excellent. And she's just sitting there basically going, my gosh, I'm really up against some serious competition. So they got very nervous. And then that also added to how they second guess what they'd make food. And then when they get reviews, because not only would you get a rating, but you also get a review. And your review might say, it's too spicy, not enough spicy. And so the chefs got smart and they would realize that they were getting the same review from multiple players, like too much salt and not enough salt, they would start to change their recipes against how they normally make food to cater towards what the reviews they were getting because, of course, they want to win. And so we see that happening too. So, again, you really see there's two parts of the show, Simon. There's the cooking part and then there's the gameplay part. And you had to be able to, you know, kind of, you know, be right in that center in order to make it far. And that's sort of, again, what we saw once the chef realized, oh, this is really a game about cooking. And that was really fun to watch them make that discovery. Now, if we cast it, the players coming in would know, and we'd have to come up with other ways to sort of steer them in different directions. But the first time around, it was like they didn't really know at all what's happening. In fact, we brought them on that set. We didn't even let them see the set. They literally woke up in that room the first time, and they didn't even know they were. They were like, there's no kitchen. I don't even know where I am. So that was all very real reactions when you watched that first 5 minutes of the show.
Mm-hmm. We are talking with Patrick Duty. He's the executive producer and showrunner of the new Hulu series Secret Chef, now running on that service, available on smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles. Patrick is live with us from L.A., this half hour on Tomorrow After Televised. We are just getting started with this two-hour episode of the promo about TV's current and future. Happy to have you with us wherever you are on this final day of June 2023. Tom Avon with you live from New York, 82 degrees. We get toward the bottom of the hour. And raining minutes with Patrick, make a call. Get involved. 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. We will have another big hour, two-hour show for you coming up next Thursday, July 6th. Our lead guest will be from the Netflix series The Lincoln Lawyer, which starts its second season that day. We'll have executive producer Ross Feynman. And from the new CW series Moonshine that premieres the following night, we'll have creator executive producer Sherry Elwood. She will be our final guest. That's a big two-hour episode coming your way next Thursday, July 6th, one of our back-to-back-to-back episode triple header gang. That's all coming your way again that Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Because the contestants rate and review each other, was there any concern that, oh, my God, this might end up like The Weakest Link, which lost its credibility as a game show because when the contestants vote each other off, when they were asked, why did you vote blank off, it was for, like, the dumbest of reasons?
So great question. You know, you have limited control, right, because, you know, people playing games, there's money on the line. And chefs, they can go down a path that you don't want them to go down. So we really had to be sort of very upfront with them and say, listen, you know, in order for this competition to work, we really need you to vote and rate as honestly as you can, not to purposely tank somebody or whatever. And I think ultimately somewhat of the chef's, you know, sort of ego gets in the way, not in the way, it's a bad way of saying it. Their need to strive to be the best, because that's very much in the mindset of a chef, is that they want to compete for real. Like, they don't want to send someone home who's good. They want to be able to say they beat someone who's good. And so we never really ever looked at a rating card and said, oh, this person's purposely tanking the reviews. And, you know, listen, we have a lot, you know, there's a lot of money in the line, $100,000. We have a serious set of compliance rules, and they're with us the whole way through, looking at every single thing that we do. So we set it up in a way where we really encouraged them to be honest, and then we made sure they were being honest. And we never once had a situation where a chef sort of went down a path to basically purposely tank someone for winning. They were really in it to compete and do the best they could, and they wanted it to be as honest as possible.
Mm-hmm. Because the show is set in an underground location, was it actually produced underground? Did you have to go, you know, find an underground location you could get into and out of very, very quickly? Or did you do a special set somewhere in Los Angeles?
No, we basically had to find a very secret place where we could bring these people, and we had to basically turn it into a working set. And it was very tricky. Obviously, we art directed the place to look cool, but it was a very remote, very cool place, and I don't want to give away any more about that, because who knows, maybe another season may come along and we might get to learn a little bit more about the history of the secret cooking facility.
What kind of cooking challenges were there?
Well, every challenge had to have an element that utilized the conveyor belt, right? So we had an incredible challenge team. Many of them had come up through the sort of Food Network world of cooking shows, and all very experienced chefs themselves. As you know, most cooking shows, every cooking show you see, the people who actually put together the kitchens and the food and all those stories, all those challenges are actually incredible cooks. So every single element of what they did had to have an element of fun and gameplay on top of just cooking. So whether or not we're going to send new ingredients down the conveyor belt or take away ingredients or send messages or whatever. So everything had to have a game aspect to it. And then on top of that, we wanted to actually showcase really good cooking. So, you know, flavor profiles, certain kind of seasonings, working with certain kind of kitchen appliances, you know, we utilize a lot of really very cooking-related gameplay on top of really fun gameplay using the belt and the location of the facility. So I can I'll give you an example. The first episode, they had, you know, we basically had them work with a partner who they never saw. It was called the tag team. So, you know, now remember, they don't know any about their skill sets. They know nothing about these people. They don't even know what they're cooking with. So they would go into the kitchen. They would work for, you know, like 20 or 30 minutes. They would then leave the kitchen, leaving whatever they were working on with a little recipe card saying, when you come in, here's where you go. And the next person came in not knowing who they were working with, who their partner was, or anything, and they just had to take their recipe and then pick it up from there. And then they did it two more times. So they were trade off. Mm-hmm. And so it made for a really interesting thing because it was like, if you imagine, if you're, you know, you produce a podcast, imagine that you had someone before you starting a conversation with a guest. You had no idea who that guest was. You knew nothing they were talking about. And you literally walked in the room and there was just a card. I'm talking to this person. Here's what we're asking. Now you pick it up from there. And then off you go. So it was, that was one of the big, that was the very first episode challenge where we did this tagless tag team. And it was funny. It was really funny and a great, and they did it amazingly well. Like they really rose the occasion. They jumped, they dove right in and just did it.
Any early feedback from viewers or from Hulu or from the chefs themselves?
Well, one of our co-EPs, a guy named Tommy, has been talking to the chefs. He dealt with them throughout the whole time in the stories, and from what he's giving us feedback-wise, they are losing their minds on Instagram, and they've been having viewing parties, and they've been doing a ton of local television to promote the show from the cities they're from to proudly say they've come from these, you know, very, you know, different parts of America as far as the kind of cooks they are. And so they've been doing that. And then, like, I think because we've had a lot of promotion for the show, but like all things in streaming world, you know, you turn on Hulu and it just shows this thing and it says like brand new Secret Chef, and people love cooking shows. And we have found that the casual viewers who have just started watching yesterday were glued. I mean, I watched people on Twitter basically narrate a thread of the entire season with the ups and the downs, not giving it away, but just excitedly going off on how crazy it was to see what we threw at the chefs. And then, of course, we have a lot of people who really like Chefy, and then Chefy's kind of a little weird and offbeat, so we got a lot of reviews on that. So, like, what I can tell, you know, I don't know what the numbers are, obviously, that I don't get that kind of information, but the optics from what I'm seeing on Twitter has been extremely favorable, and that's really fun. And I get very engaged with the viewers on Twitter because we have to really keep them on the hook because it's so hard, Simon, to get anything through and find an audience. I mean, it's just really, really hard these days. I think what has helped us in a really crazy way is The Bear is also on Hulu. And from what I can tell, Secret Chef is getting recommended to people who finish The Bear because it's a cookie show. And so we're getting a lot of Bear viewers who are going into this who are like, I need more shows about cooking. And then they find this show. And so it becomes a discovery. And that's really the dream, right, for people to discover the show, not to tell them they have to watch it, to find it and go, what is this show? Which is really, as you said, being very surreal. You watch the first 5 minutes, you're kind of hooked. You're like, what is this show? This is not like any cooking show I've seen. So, you know, we get those viewers in, and then we've seen them, from what I can tell, stay all the way to the very end, and that's been really great.
Yeah. Patrick, we have about a minute left, so while we wait to see whether Hulu
sure.
gives you a second season, any other TV projects you're working on now?
I just finished a really exciting Food Network show that'll be on in Christmas time. Other than that, I'm just like really excited to have Secret Chef out there right now for Hulu, and they've been great partners. And like this show is playing globally, so if you can't get it in America on Hulu, you can probably find it on Disney Plus in other countries. So we have a lot of people around the world watching this, and so I'm thrilled that it's out there. Everybody really worked hard. It was a labor of love. Like I said, we spent the better part of a year putting it together. So I'm grateful to be on the program to discuss it. And thanks for having me back, Simon.
Patrick, it is a pleasure. And if you want to know more about Secret Chef, which is now running on Hulu, just go to Hulu.com. It's Hulu, H-U-L-U.com. Secret Chef premiered yesterday on that service. And, of course, it's available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles near you. Patrick, thanks again for joining us. Delighted you're back. And we'd love to have you back again for the next TV project, Food and Otherwise. It's been always a pleasure.
Simon, appreciate it. Have a good one.
You too, and a wonderful 4th of July weekend.
All right, yes, and farewell to Alan Arkin. He's a fantastic actor. We're going to miss him.
You're very welcome. Thank you for saying that. We will have more about Alan Arkin coming up our next half hour. Patrick, take care. Patrick Duty joining us live from Los Angeles. And when we come back, we will have some thoughts about the TV side of Alan Arkin. It was very, very special, including A&E's first television scripted series, 100 Centistreet. I thought it was a marvelous show. It reunited with Sidney Lumet, the great director, after a long time out of television. We'll talk about Alan Arkin, classic trivia question. And first, one of the top stars of lifestyle television, Genevieve Gorder. She's back in action with a new series on Crackle, At Home with Genevieve, and she will join us live from Nueva York after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogsofradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 85 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love old-time radio, check out Erie House tonight at BTR. It's today at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. That's Erie House. I understand it's all about horrors in hospitals. Old-time radio, great old-time radio for you. Erie House, today, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, exclusively here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, Best Be Charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of Tomorrow Be Televised. We're still in our first of 2 hours this Friday afternoon for you. Simon Apple with you live along for the ride. 82 degrees at the bottom of the hour. You have a question or comment for our next guest. Make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04, my name. When our next guest got an internship way back when with MTV, little did he know it was a stepping stone to an incredible career on television. You have seen her in all sorts of shows on places like Bravo and Netflix and Home and Garden Television and TLC, and now she is on the mega content service Crackle with a series that premiered last week called At Home with Genevieve, presented by PetSmart. Joining me here in New York, the wonderful Genevieve Gorder. Genevieve, welcome in.
Hi, Simon. Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
It is a pleasure, Genevieve. So how have things been going 1 week into your new series on Crackle?
You know, it's been going really well. The numbers are great. Everyone is ecstatic, and we're looking forward to making a lot more content. It was something I've been wanting to do for a long time, and Crackle has been fantastic to work with. Just like, go do whatever you want. We support you. Let's make it. And, you know, that's kind of new for me, and I really enjoyed myself. Making a talk show about lifestyle in a way that is a little bit more how we watch TV today, which is a little quicker, you know, both design and talk have been pretty antiquated templates in the world of broadcast for a long time, as I've been doing it for a long time. It's been the same. And I really wanted a new perspective on home from people from all over the spectrum, all over the city, all over the country, all over the world. I want to represent home in a bigger, broader way than I think it typically gets shown on television. That's been something that I've been working on for quite some time.
In a way, Genevieve, is this like breaking expectations with viewers about what they would see you do, let's say they would expect when they turn you on somewhere? Genevieve is going to redesign somebody's home or somebody's room or somebody's space, or they're going to answer a question about the whole design field. Because it sounds like what you just said, that this is going to be a different kind of Genevieve Gorder experience.
You know, in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. So, yes, I've done a lot of renovations in person, on site, doing construction nonstop. I've also been on a lot of talk shows. So I've done a lot of talking about design for decades as well. And this was just kind of an amalgamation of what do I still want to learn about home? Who's doing what now? How do we feel about it? And whose version of home are we looking at? Because there are many different versions and you got to scratch the surface to get everybody at the table. So there's a lot of talk about what you know me for intimately, which is everything about redoing home, but there's also all the things in lifestyle that I also do that aren't always on television, whether it's gardening, it's food, it's cleaning alchemy. Let's have some drag queens in there and let's talk about love therapy because sex and marriage and relationships are all part of home too. It's our hub for everything. So I wanted to dig in a broader way, not just with Pete.
Can Phoebe there?
I'm here.
Oh, there we go. Okay, we just had some. You blacked out for a second. Finish the last thought you had. We had you somehow. We got blacked out for a moment.
Oh no. Okay. Where did we?
Well, I'll take it this way. How long did it take you to come up with this format? Was it a quicker situation or a longer time, let's say, than other shows you've done?
Not hard at all. Not long at all. You know, it's shockingly easy because we've collected wonderful humans throughout the decades of home TV, and now it's just kind of putting them all together and seeing what happens. So I'm looking at things that you hear about, talk about, watch about for years, but coming from different kinds of people. Like, I want your therapist to be a drag queen because they've lived harder than you and have had to deal with way more than you have. So let's dig in. What do they have to say about matters of the heart? Let's go. Ask me any question you want. Let's talk about cleaning, but somebody who approaches it from an alchemy kind of perspective where they want to make natural potions and removing stains and the hardships of life. They're natural things that you can grab around your house. You know, let's talk about dumplings. I want to make the best dumplings that I've been obsessing about on Instagram. Let's bring them in and let's go. And let's have a good time doing it. Let's not take it so seriously. Home is really important, but we need to enjoy and have fun while we're doing and making it.
This is the first TV series you've made, Genevieve, with a mega content service. That's why I call Crackle, Netflix, Hulu, Prime Video, Paramount Plus, Max, et cetera. Was there a different environment or different experience for you in doing this kind of program for them, let's say, as opposed to the shows you've done for various cable networks like Bravo and Home and Garden TV?
I mean, I have done Netflix before as well. I would say with streaming and working for this type of channel service, however you want to put it, there's a lot more freedom, I would say, because the brand itself isn't as established as these older channels that have been through traditional TV and been here for a long time. There's like, you know, there is a template for who they are and who they're not, which I understand. But all the programming has to fit into that box, whereas with players like Netflix or Crackle, it feels a little bit more liberated. Like, you can really push the envelope and do new stuff. And for a creative, that's wonderful. That's like a dream. You can play. You can experiment. You can go broader. You can be more real, more urban, more who you are, and not have to bend, which that's the dream, right? So it was a beautiful marriage. I really, really am enjoying working with them very much. And it's free. So let's just talk about that for a second. I did, but let's talk about free for a second, because every single channel we seem to add on to our television, it's like, we'll give you a trial for 3 days and then we're going to charge you $30 a month, right? And I think there's general fatigue with this over-tipping and over-ask for subscriptions. And it's really refreshing to be on TV in one way that feels very, very antiquated, like when we were kids and watched TV and it was free. So I'm really proud to be associated with that, because I think we all are looking for anything that we can get for free without a hitch. What were you going to ask me before? Sorry, Simon.
Well, I was going to ask you, in addition to giving you the space to do the kind of show you wanted to do and go into some different, as you mentioned, some different areas you hadn't done before, Crackle also got you a sponsor in PetSmart.
And that's, you know, how television basically works in general. No matter where you are, you either have ad sales and there's a lot of commercials run during your program on traditional TV, on streaming. It can be more of a product placement. Talk shows have been doing it for decades, and it is how we function as well. And we had PetSmart as our first sponsor, and it was great because you just weave it into spots about pets, which absolutely fits into lifestyle. I represent such a broad category of life that sponsorship is quite easy, as just about anything fits into it, and we can make a story about it. Pets is something I definitely can relate to, and there's so many pet owners who have questions constantly, so it was an easy and fun segment to do, and my dog got to be on TV, so can't complain about that.
Mm-hmm. Genevieve Gorder is our guest this half hour on Smart Be Televised, and her newest TV series is now running on Crackle, the mega content service that is ad-supported and, as mentioned, free. The show is called At Home with Genevieve. It premiered last week, now in its second week on that service, which is available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. And Genevieve joins me here in Nueva York this half hour here on Smart Be Televised. Tom, I've been with you live from Nueva York. Thank you to those who are just joining us. From the bottom of the hour, 82 degrees, and a bit on the hazy side, depending on where you are in the NYC metro area. If a question or comment for Genevieve, make the phone go. And the number is 646-652-2906, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Back-to-back-to-back episode triple header coming your way to kick off July after the July 4th holiday weekend. And again, coming your way next Wednesday, we'll have Nate Dappin. He is the producer-director, one of them, on the new PBS series Human Footprints, which premieres that night on most public television stations. Also, we'll give you a preview of a new network aimed at global black culture. It's called MANSA, M-A-N-S-A. The co-founder, Zach Tandoff, will be joining us. And then the next day, our lead guest on a special two-hour edition that Thursday will be from the Netflix series The Lincoln Lawyer, going to season two that day, executive producer Ross Feynman. And from the new CW drama Moonshine, creator and executive producer Sherry Elwood. She'll be our final guest that day. That's all coming your way next Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, July 5th, 6th, and 7th, exclusively here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And, Jenny, one of the things that this show allowed you to do was to do some reuniting with people you have worked with before, specifically the former host of Trading Spaces on TLC, Paige Davis, and the wonderful Stacey London from What Not to Wear.
Correct. They have been my friends now for over 20 years. And it's like when you have a rocket that you ride that young in life and it's such a public thing, you tend to relate to those people that went through it with you because they're the only ones that can relate to that moment in your life so intimately. You keep them forever. They're your family forever. And it was nice to have them join me on the show. Both of them are doing so many cool things and it was just great to connect again. And people love it when we get together. They just go nuts. So we're giving it to you.
I met Paige a couple of times at various cable shows way back when. How is she doing?
She's wonderful. You know, Paige is a Broadway beast. She's just so incredible at singing, dancing, acting. She's in every show all the time, as well as her husband, multiple Tony Award-winning actor. And we just, you know, it's like we're sisters. We just kind of pick up where we left off. Every time we see each other, it's like no time has gone by. So we had a real fun time looking at social media DIY videos on what the world thinks you should do or tell you should do, because everyone's an expert now. We laughed for a good 30 minutes on some of these DIY tips. It was basically just trying to navigate through what you are served every single day on Pinterest, on Instagram, on Facebook. We think you should do this with your home. You should paint your fireplace, paint your stone. I mean, and saying, okay, this is a good idea and this is not a great idea. This is why. Because there really are no rules on social media. It's just wild cowboy. And so it's good to help, you know, go to a trusted resource to let you know what's what. And that's what we tried to do. Meanwhile, Stacey London, she has started her own company and is the CEO of the State of Menopause and is broadening this conversation about what half the population goes through at some point in their life and making it just more normalized. And I appreciate that. It's basically being an advocate for female health.
Mm-hmm. Did you have guests on the program that you took them in a way out of their comfort zone to do something different? So I'm noticing in the press release about your show that you've had some very interesting people do some very unusual things. For example, you have this person. This name has got to be one of the great names in recent days. Maximo Extravaganza. Maximo Extravaganza, who showed you how to do drinks.
Yes. You know what? It's like I want the whole world to be invited to the table of home. And for so long, to be quite honest, it's been very white, it's been very wealthy, and it's been very conservative. And I want to open up that spectrum so that everyone has a seat at this table because we all enjoy home the same way and we all want to live beautifully. Maximo is a beautiful soul. He is from the House of Extravaganza. And if you don't know what it is to Vogue and the dance balls that go on in New York, you are missing out. I mean, Madonna definitely stole it for a while when she served her song Vogue. You have a little bit of an idea, but it is a lifestyle and it is ferocious. And not only is Massimo a dancer, they're also a beautiful mixologist. And they taught me a bunch of different ways to make things that I could use at all the parties I host. At home, I want to create a cocktail and I never have the time to do it right. I'm a cook. I don't think about the drinks. They're an afterthought. And he schooled me. I want to get schooled. And in process, I want everyone else to learn too. We have fun. And it was so much fun doing that. We're friends. Everybody that I didn't know is now my friend. Otherwise, you were invited on because you were a friend. And let's just talk the talk, because home is a never-ending pot of goodies that we have to dig on.
Was there a particular segment or episode that took you out of your comfort zone in terms of showcasing either a subject or getting you to do something far different than what you normally do?
That's a great question. You know what? If you know me well, you know it's really difficult to make me feel uncomfortable or nervous, because I am very adaptable and I'm very open to just about anything. I'm trying to think what. There was not one thing on the show that was uncomfortable. You know, I'm talking sometimes to complete strangers, having little to go on, and I have to make it interesting for 85 million people. And I get kind of a high out of doing that. Like, I love the challenge, and I love getting to know people, however ridiculous that sounds, and introverts are all rolling their eyes. But it really is how I'm wired. So I find it all pretty lovely. And I haven't yet had that moment where I'm like, this is uncomfortable, I want it to end. And if I did, it probably would be a hit. You know, people like it when things go wrong. We're not there yet. We haven't made that many shows yet. So give me some time, Simon.
You got it. David Gorder is our guest this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise, and her new television series is on Crackle. It's called At Home with Genevieve, now in its second week on that mega content service, available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. If you have a question or comment in our remaining minutes with Genevieve, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up for the top of the hour, our classic trivia question of the week. We have four great prizes in play, including two reward cards if you're first with the correct answer. And then some thoughts about the great TV career of a magnificent actor named Alan Arkin, who passed away earlier today. All that and more coming up before the top of the hour. Genevieve, could you imagine what life would be like for you if you had not taken that MTV internship?
You know, I think about it often, and I don't know if MTV led directly to my TV career. I mean, it definitely helped, but I had a number of jobs in studios that were very traditional right after, in advertising, et cetera. I designed this one gin bottle for Tanqueray 10 when I was like 22, and it won all these nerdy awards in design that no one would care about unless you're in design. But they found me through, the production house found me through those awards and asked me to come and audition for Trading Spaces. Nobody knew how old I was, what I looked like, or if I could speak. And it kind of happened. After 5,000 people were interviewed, they picked six of us, and it launched. Do I think about what my life would be like? Yeah, it would be tremendously different, and this was never the plan. I mean, there was, you know, Martha Stewart and Bob Vila back in the day, and that was about it. This wasn't really an option for a career as a creative. So it was a bit of an accident, maybe a bit of fate, as some would say, but I was absolutely built for it. I love teaching. I love connecting, and I love learning. And I feel like that is also a huge genre on television. It just kind of gets piled into reality, but it's more docu. I'm showing you real stuff and how it works and how it doesn't work. And we're being honest and authentic, and I'm playing nobody but myself. So do I think about my life? Yeah, it would be a lot less fun if this didn't happen. What I would be, Simon? I don't know. I have no idea.
Have you had any feedback in the opening week of the series from people? What are they saying about what you're doing?
We have. I think, you know, I always get a little nervous before I put out any show, just because – You may love it, but no one else may like it. It's kind of like when you choose a name for a kid, you get nervous because everyone has a reaction, and some of it's really personal, or they don't like it, and it taints the experience. I don't want to hear anything until someone told me, and the network contacted me, and they said the numbers are amazing, and the response makes the network ecstatic. So I think we're in a really good place, and we're building this new series, you know, bit by bit. And I'm so overjoyed to be working with the people that I am working with, my crew. And I don't say that just to say it, but for anyone who knows television, you know exactly what I mean. When you get the right chemistry of people, no matter what you do, actually, when the chemistry of the people that you work with is great, it's not work. Everyone's a professional. Everyone knows how to do their job, and it's just fun. And I hope everyone at home can see that when they're watching the show, how much fun we're actually having, because it was a blast. And I've done a lot of TV shows. This is by far the most fun I've had making a show.
And one of the shows that you were on regularly was the Rachel Ray Show. And Rachel, this season, is calling it a time after more than a decade on the air. Any thoughts about her leaving syndication, and who knows where she will go? But no question that her show was a major daytime TV force for quite some time.
Oh, for sure. And she is an excellent human being and really catapults and celebrates everybody that she has on the show. That was another family for sure. But after 17 years, I get it. I get that Rachel wants to do some new stuff. I know she just bought a house in Italy. I know that that girl doesn't know how to not work, though. So I'm sure there is a lot more to come from Rachel Ray. No doubt. No doubt.
So are you already starting to get ideas for season two at home, some things you didn't do this time around that you want to do in the next set of episodes?
We are hoping for hundreds of more episodes at this point, and the ideas are kind of endless, particularly because we're all based in New York, so we have this huge pot to pull from, you know, with so many different kinds of people, different kinds of home, with different perspectives, that has just been so easy to cast. And it's a good place to be based, as people will fly in and spend a weekend, or it's not out of the way, let's just say. So yes, we have a lot more to come. And we're hoping too for some interactive questions from the people who are watching this as well. Like, we're highly flexible and want to be able to pivot. So whatever is happening in current events, what's happening at home, what's happening in pop culture, we want to dig into in a fun way that pertains to home. And home is a lot cooler than I think we've given it credit for the last hundreds of years. Home is just as cool as fashion, as food. Food has had the permission to get sexy. And home hasn't yet. And so we're hoping to push that envelope, that it is kind of the display case of who you are and what you are in this world, the one environment you control, and it should be cool as hell. So let's stop trying to do everything for $50 and and cut corners and really talk about more about what things actually cost and the depth of what home means, because it's deep. It's not surface. We surely have a long way to go on television in showing that depth, and this is my plan. I'm doing it one show at a time.
Before you go, being a big fan of Korean food, because I used to have a girlfriend from Korea, what is the secret to a great Korean dumpling? I understand one of your episodes had a man named Frankie Gao who showed you and everybody watching what the trick is. So what is the trick?
Listen, Simon, I am so down for any Korean food, and I could put gochujang or gochujang on just about everything. Frankie is Taiwanese-American, so it's a little bit different. I would say not quite as spicy. I think just like any great dish, it's sometimes the simplicity of it that is shocking. And I swear to God, there was probably only 7 ingredients and just a little bit of extra effort in how you fold and treat the skin of that dumpling. Dumplings for me, and I think every culture can relate to this, the thinner the skin, the better. Otherwise, it's bun, right? You don't want it to be too doughy. So we learned how to make those wrappers by hand, and, you know, not just buy them, and how to add different colors, as well as those beautiful Taiwanese shapes, the folds, the braids, and the stars. And it's really not hard. And I break it down in this segment. I have been crushing on Frankie Ga for a decade, and we met actually working at Facebook for a while. I was doing some design stuff for them. He was interested in what I was doing. He left everything to go live with his Taiwanese grandma in Seattle and just learn her recipes. And I applaud anyone who's connected to family like that and has a love of food like that. And, of course, every post is stunningly beautiful because he's from the tech world. He flew in and made dumplings with us for 2 hours, and the whole cast was on their knees begging for more. I'm telling you, ingredients, that's it. Don't overcomplicate would be my advice. That's the secret to a great dumpling.
Great. And as for the whole idea of steam versus pan fry, that's a debate we'll set aside for another story. At home with
Genevieve. But I'm all
pan
fry.
Now on Crackle, made content service available on smart TV sets, devices, multi-channel bundles. Sponsored by PetSmart. For more details about the show online, go to www.crackle.com. That's www.crackle.com. And Crackle is a service from Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment. Genevieve Gorder, thank you very much for a delightful time. Congratulations on this new show. Hopefully the beginning of a very long run there. And let's have you back soon. It has been a great pleasure all the way.
What a pleasure. Ditto to you, and happy to talk to another New Yorker. Have a wonderful afternoon.
You too, and a great 4th of July weekend. All the best. Genevieve Gorder joining us live here in New York. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. And if you're first with the correct answer, we have 4 prizes in play for you. We have a rewards card from Starbucks versus the BBC. We have a, speaking of Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment, a 3 Redbox movie night card available for you. We've got the brand new book, Sons of Baseball, by former U.S. network publicist Mark Brath. He used to have his own PR firm as well. And from Canela Media, the coloring book based on the popular new series Super Ellis, going back for a second season soon, and crayons as well. And the question is this. Name the building next to Petticoat Junction. Yes, we are talking about the popular CBS series starring Babe Benedict and Eddie Buchanan that ran from 1963 to 1970 on that network. Name the building next to Petticoat Junction. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you email the correct answer wins those prizes. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Once again, the question, name the building. We need an exact answer next to Petticoat Junction. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. We have time at the end of the program. We'll give you the question again. If not, we don't get a winner by the end of today. Facebook and Twitter. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in, so do so, and all the very best. As mentioned earlier, the Emmy-nominated and Oscar-winning actor Alan Arkin passed away earlier today at the age of 89 in California. When it comes to actors who know how to get into a role, no matter what kind of role, and we mean heart, soul, spirit, Alan Arkin could do it better than anybody else, in my opinion. And he didn't just do it on movies, in films like Popey, The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming, Little Miss Sunshine, his Oscar-winning role, Argo, one of his last ones, and, of course, The Heart of the Lonely Hunter. But he did so on television. First time around, a 1963 episode of East Side, West Side with George C. Scott called The Beatnik and the Politician, about a beatnik played by Arkin who tries to become a politician and how he makes out. And then he was in one of the early ABC Stage 67 presentations in 1966 called The Love Song of Barney Kapinski. You can see that, by the way, on YouTube. It's a marvelous performance. And when he got his fame in film and stage, I might add, in plays like Enter Laughing and Lube, L-U-V, he kept doing television in made-for-TV movies like Escape from Civil War. And in 2001, he starred in the City of Med comeback program 100 Center Street, produced by A&E, first original scripted series for that network, and the first of original scripted series to be done anywhere in high-definition television here in New York. It ran for 2 seasons on A&E. He played a judge who seemed to give leniency sometimes to criminals. He did terrific. And he also had a son named Adam Arkin, who turned out to be a wonderful actor-director on his own. Alan Arkin was a very unique actor among actors. He could do comedy, as he did in The In-Laws. He could do drama. He could do very unique characters like Popey and the Deaf Mute, the Heart of the Lonely Hunter. Just a marvelous talent. And he lived an incredible life. And his TV work and his movie work and his theater work, both in front of and behind the stage, speaks for itself so beautifully. Alan Arkin passed away earlier today at the age of 89. When we come back, a local show out of Indianapolis, Indiana, makes good nationally in syndication. That show is called Lifestyle Live. The executive producer, Peggy McClellan, joins me live from Indianapolis after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com. Together, reaching over 85 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love sports, check out the Richard Miller Report tomorrow. He'll have all the action on everything from golf to Major League Baseball, the latest on post-NBA draft, post-NHL draft, and so much more. The Richard Miller Report tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, exclusively here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget Best BTR always 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday afternoon, last day of June, last day of the first half of 2023. And welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New York, 82 degrees and quite hazy at the top of the hour. Hope you are doing great getting ready for a big 4th of July extended weekend. And if you have a question or comment for our guests to come in this hour, give us a call. Here's the number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. And we've got our chat room going. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And, of course, you can always mingle with others by Facebook using their timeline feature. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen. Follow those instructions, and we'll be live with you. Our next guest will be joining us from Indianapolis, Indiana, and here in New York, in fact, not far from where yours truly is right now, after some News Note quickies. A trio of series earned 5 2023 Television Critics Award nominations this morning, Succession and The Last of Us at HBO, and FX's The Bear. The honorees will be announced August 7th. Sweet Magnolias will start its third season on Netflix July 20th. Grammy-winning group Little Big Town will perform and host the first People's Choice Country Awards September 28th. NBC and Peacock will simulcast the event live from Nashville's Grand Ole Opry House. Stellar Gospel Music Awards 2023 will happen July 15th in Las Vegas. Stellar TV Network, which was the subject of a recent Swabby Televised episode early this month, will run the event and a red carpet pre-show on July 30th, then offer it to multi-channel bundles like Zumo Play and broadcast stations during August and early September. And Hulu will kick off the third season of Only Murders in the Building, starring Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez, August 8th. And that is News Notes for today. From time to time on this program, we have showcased local shows that are from broadcast stations, cable systems, other sources that either make it nationally or inspire other shows that go national. And this is the case with our next subject. It's called Lifestyle Live. And for 13 years, it's been one of the major attractions on Indianapolis television through WISH-TV, the CW affiliate. Last week, thanks to syndicator Trifecta Entertainment, that show went national. And now it is running on more than 20 stations around the country, including Louisville, Minneapolis-St. Paul, Nashville, Tennessee, the Norfolk area in Virginia, Phoenix, Portland, Oregon, San Diego, St. Louis, Syracuse, New York, Columbus, Georgia, and other cities. And joining us live to talk about the program and its new national stature is the executive producer all along of the series, joining us live in the studios of WISH in Indianapolis, Peggy McClellan. Peggy, congratulations, and we welcome you to our program.
Oh, thank you, Simon. We appreciate the invite.
Peggy, speak up. We're having a little, just speak up a little more near the phone.
Okay, can you hear me here?
Peggy, for some reason, we're not hearing you. So if you like, give us a call back, 646-652-2906, at 646-652-2906. Give us a call back, and as soon as I see you're ready to go on the air, we will get you on because we're not hearing you. And I don't know if it's the phone or the line, so give us a call back, and as soon as I see you're ready to go on, we'll get you on. In the meantime, just to let you know, as I said, Lifestyle Live is now running on more than 20 stations around the country, syndicated by Trifecta Entertainment. The show, incidentally, is hosted by, I make sure I have everybody right, Amber Hawkins, Cody Adams, with entertainment reporter Anicia Ramsey, and specialty content creator Kayla Sullivan, who does a Kidding with Kayla segment. All right? So once again, Peggy McClellan is the executive producer of the program. So Peggy, give us the call back, 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see you're ready to go back on the air, we'll get you back. And again, Lifestyle Live from Circle City Broadcasting, that's the owners of WISH, Indianapolis, is an award-winning series. It's been on for 13 seasons. And last week, it made the move into syndication to through Trifecta Entertainment. And Peggy is ready to come back, so let's see. Peggy, welcome back. Let's hope we have you now wonderfully in sound.
You got me to assignment. Are we good now?
All right, you're a little bit better, so we'll keep you on for it. So, Peggy, first of all, congratulations on the National Moopsy Show. How's it been going so far, 1 week or so in? When did Trifecta first think about taking the show national, or had you thought, where you are at WIFH and Circle City Broadcasting, the owners, about taking the show national?
Yeah, I think he's been talking about it for a while, and then I know he got into negotiations with them and put it out there. We've been thinking probably over the last year that we've been positioning it to be a little bit more of a national scope. And we've just sort of sandwiched right in there. So, yeah. I mean, we've got so much great content here in the Midwest. And this show being live is kind of unique to itself. And sometimes we're a little more live than we'd like to be. But it's got all aspects of life, every single show, every single week, from animals to cooking. Cooking is really big. When we started this show back in 2020, the kitchen was kind of the heart of the home. And we started off with a major focus with cooking. And then we've got fashion and animals and people, and we don't have any shortage of people who want to come on and be on. We think we're good storytellers, and we like to bring people on to tell their story. It's a very comfortable show. See your neighbors, and you learn something from it, and there's always a good takeaway from every single segment.
How did the series happen? What was it designed to be basically a talk show or a public affairs-like show every weekday, morning or afternoon? Or did it take some time to sort of find its voice, if you will, as something that was not only showcasing, let's say, news, but also local entertainment or local cultural happenings or be more of a lifestyle programming dealing with areas of food, and as we just had with Genevieve Gorder, design? Home improvement, home renovation.
Right. Well, from the beginning, it was meant to touch every viewer in some way. Back in 2020, I joined the station. I was brought in because I've been in broadcasting for many years and done a lot of concepts and shows of different kinds. I kind of grew up through the golden age, right? And so I was brought in to start this show. They had a blank studio. They decided they wanted to have a kitchen. They wanted to have activities. We have a lot of live music that comes through here, too, because they saw that there was a lot of opportunity in this area. So from the very beginning, it was meant to be lifestyle. I mean, we did, you know, everything from an ugly chair contest when we first started. But we went around and found people in the beginning that simply had things to offer about everything from cooking to home improvement to how to fix a hole in your screen door, you know. And it just kept going. And like I said, there's always people in the community that want to come on and talk about what they're doing. But that was there. But we've had musicians and comedians. And when people would travel through Indiana, like a Michael or other musicians that are coming through or sports personalities, they stop in and they chat with us. It's sort of like I always wanted it to be any of our contributors knock on your door, you have over and come in and have a cup of coffee with you. You know, it's that kind of comfort zone. And our hosts are there to act as if they were the viewers. They're asking the questions. And so it's just like we're sitting in your home and you're talking and you're finding out things. And we might have a juggler from a local circus one day, and there's animals and kids and a little bit of everything, but that's the way it started, and that's the way it's continued, and we've always put a little more polish on it as we go, but now we have a lot of people knocking on the door wanting to be a part of it and tell their stories.
We're speaking with Peggy McClellan, and she is the executive producer of Daytime Television's newest national syndicated show, Lifestyle Live, which originates from the studios of WISH-TV, the CW affiliate in Indianapolis, Indiana. As I mentioned, more than 20 stations around the country are now running the show, including places like Albany, Schenectady, Troy, that's in the capital region of New Upper York, the state, Fresno, California, Great Falls, Montana, Indianapolis, of course, Louisville, Kentucky, and many, many more. And we suspect other stations will get on the line, as well as perhaps also going on smart TV sets, device, and multi-channel bundles. And Peggy joins us live from the studios of WISH-TV, live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Admiral with you live from wherever you are. Thank you for joining us on the program about TV's current future, particularly if you just joined us at the top of the hour. 82 degrees and sunny, a bit on the hazy side here in wherever you are. Hopefully we will get great weather for the entire 4th of July holiday weekend, which starts tomorrow. And if you're going to be leaving for somewhere around the country, around the world, we hope that you get to where you're going in great, great shape. If you need to, check in with your airline or train carrier before you head out the door so that you hear about any cancellation delays rather than wait till you get to the airport or the train station to find out what's going on. And if you have a question or comment for Peggy, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up later in the hour, we'll have our first ever takeaway of the first half of the year. We call it the new channel explosion. And our next half hour, we will have David Shane. He is the creator of Driven, a very interesting dramatic TV series pilot about an Uber driver and what that person deals with. It was shown recently at the Tribeca Film Festival here in New York. How is it doing since? Will it get on near somewhere near you soon? We'll ask David. He'll join me not far from where I am coming to you now. And we'll also have a tribute to one of the most unique television critics around, the late and great Marvin Kittman. That's all coming up later in the hour. Peggy, have you heard from other television stations around the country about taking the show? And of the 21 stations that are carrying the show now, how many of them are simulcasting it live along with WISH?
I don't have that number, but I think most of them are carrying it a little later in the day.
And by the way, Peggy, when does your show go on, Eastern Time and Central Time in Indianapolis? So 9 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Eastern Time.
10 a.m. Eastern Time, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the hosts and the contributions that they make to the program. Do you each day divide up who will do what and what experts will come on and support them? Prior to Trifecta syndicating the show, had you experimented with doing segments outside Indianapolis? I understand, for example, that in past episodes you've done segments from the Indianapolis 500. You've gone to the NBA All-Star Game. Actually, you'll be going to the NAA All-Star Game next year. which is taking place in your city. But did you do, let's say, segments elsewhere out of the city or out of the state?
Well, we're on statewide network across the state. We have done some travel stuff with them, and we frequently do live shots that we bring back in the studio from various places around the state, yes.
And are there plans to, with the national distribution now, do more of those segments? Have you done any so far in the first week or two? And what are some of the things coming up?
Yeah, we haven't gone to any other states yet, but we've talked about what we can do to make connections outside of the state. We're not there yet, but we're down. I think it'd be pretty fun to connect with people and have them connect back as to what's going on in their neighborhoods as well.
In terms of some of the segments, talk about, there's two that really hit me off the bat in the press release I saw. One is called Finding Faith. What's that all about?
Yeah, Finding Faith, Randy Gollis is our meteorologist, and the concept of Finding Faith is that, and it's totally non-secular, but that everybody has a way that they find strength within themselves, some through religion, their own beliefs. They have it, where it's something that draws that energy to conquer problems. Or...
And I mentioned earlier Kayla Sullivan's Kidding, that's K-I-D-I-N-G or hyphen with Kayla segments. What's that, how does that work?
Yeah, Kidding with Kayla or Real Talk. She is an influencer out there who does these journalistic reports on with her kids. And it's storytelling and it's humorous parenting reports. Become quite famous with it online with Facebook and Instagram with Kayla Sullivan. And so she comes on and they're quite hilarious. She does a lot of them with her own son. And it's just a different quirky side of parenting. It's come out very quite. It's been very well received.
In a moment, we'll get into how Peggy McClellan got into the TV world and what she did before this new series. Lifestyle Live nationally. And we'll also find out if there's more national programming coming from the studios of WISH Indianapolis in the near future. Peggy McClellan is our guest this half hour on Tamavi Televised. She is the executive producer of Lifestyle Live, syndicated by Trifecta Entertainment to more than 20 stations around the country on a daily basis. So check your local listings for the station in your area and when they are playing it. Not all stations are playing it weekdays at the same time. And Peggy joins us live from the studios of WISH-TV, the CW affiliate in Indy, the home of the Indianapolis 500, other great events too. And if you have a question or comment remaining minutes with her, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up, we will have our regular feature, the takeaway of the week, a special edition, because this is the last day of the first half of 2023. What's my thought about what is the takeaway of the first half of this year? I call it the new channel explosion. What do you call it? Love to hear. More about that coming up. Peggy, I understand for those people who don't know that you have been in this business for more than 45 years, and you were also an inductee into the Indiana Broadcast Hall of Fame. How did your TV career get started?
I've had a very blessed life. I went to Ball State University and discovered broadcasting. But I got started at a local station running camera and any other jobs I could take there, and went from being on the crew to being a director and other and a department head, and I've worked my way through a lot of different stations. It's always, you know, we started back when you made your own programming on the local level, and I think that was always in my heart to do that. I've done game shows, sporting events, variety shows. Through several stations in Indiana. I spent 6 years in Hawaii, which was a really interesting experience, a lot of different kinds of shows there. But it's all been about TV production and telling stories and creating good content. Have a couple of my own companies along the way that did production. And for a while did the Who's Your Millionaire show out of here, which is a statewide game show.
New John McCoy, who is the owner of Circle City, the broadcaster that owns WISH, and we had him on the show on this program, I think, about almost 2 years ago when there was talk about doing a multicultural news network. In the press release that announced the national launch of Lifestyle Live, He mentioned, and I'm quoting here, "This is just the beginning of the type of content that we will be able to deliver to other stations and platforms from the Circle City Broadcasting Entertainment Studios here in Indianapolis." What kind of game plan is there to do more programs from your station on a national basis, and what's in the hopper?
Well, I know that we create a lot of local programming here. Another show that I'm involved in is called Business Equity and Opportunity, which is a slightly different kind of business show, which it's more for small businesses and entrepreneurs. So our one-year anniversary for that. Don't know that there's plans to take that, but, you know, maybe. It's doing quite well, and it's on the statewide level. We do a lot of specials, a lot of multicultural specials that come out of here. We have a celebrating series, which we address a lot of the community that's here, and it makes up this amazing area. So,
do you sometimes pinch yourself or just, like, have the voice in your head say, like, wow, can I believe that here I am and I am now doing the latest daytime or primetime syndicated show on national television? For a lot of shows that want to get on primetime or daytime television, it's a tough slog. You don't get on the air that quick.
We've got a great group of people here who believe in what they do. We've got a great leader who believes in what he does, and he's ready to make a difference in the world, you know. We sort of joke about world domination, but it's an opportunity, and we take it seriously. We are a voice in the world. We are a voice in the community, and the media person, you know, I mean, you need to take this seriously. People are
So moving forward, how do you take the show from here? How do you take this program from here? And as more stations come in to play, and also, what is it like to produce a show in Indianapolis, let's say compared to New York, compared to LA, or other cities, for example, that have launched daytime hits? For example, many years ago, you had Donahue and the Oprah Winfrey Show. They started in Chicago. Other shows started from Atlanta. Other shows have started from San Francisco that have become major shows in syndication.
I think Indiana's an interesting, you may not think this would be a great place when you go all those big cities, but I think we're more of the down-to-earth, the people connection here, in a sense. We've got a lot of technology coming through here, a lot of entertainment coming through here, a lot of the arts coming through here. We have an international violin competition, for example, that comes out of Indianapolis, and our zoos and the people that are living here. This is probably a lot more metropolitan. It's metropolitan and rural at the same time. Doing what we're doing, we keep adding to it. We listen to what the country may want. But I think we try to stay grounded. And I think that's what's going to be, especially being live, I think that groundedness and live. I mean, we're talking reality shows. We're a daily reality show every single day of the week. And I think that people will embrace that. And I think we just keep on that track.
The program is Lifestyle Live. It is on every weekday, Monday through Friday, from the studios of WISH-TV in Indianapolis, owned by Circle City Broadcasting. And you can now find them more than 20 stations around the country, including places like Albany 60 Troy in the Capital District of New York, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, San Diego, St. Louis, Syracuse, Wichita, Kansas, and other places around. And it's syndicated by Trifecta Entertainment, which also, by the way, is the syndicator of the popular true crime series iCrime, hosted by News Nation's Elizabeth Vargas. For more details about the program online, go to www.wishtv.com. It's www.wishtv.com. And if you want to find out more, if your station or station in your area is carrying the program, or a smart TV set or smart TV device, here's where you go. Trifecta Entertainment, that's the syndicator, trifectaentertainment.com. That's trifectaentertainment.com. Lifestyle Live, now running on more than 20 stations around the country, and it may soon come to a station or a smart TV set, smart device, and multi-channel bundle near you. Peggy McClellan, the executive producer of the series, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations to you and everybody involved at WISH for making the show happen nationally. And hopefully what started 2 weeks ago will become a big, big, big long run.
Thank you, Simon. We appreciate the invite. Hopefully we'll talk again sometime.
You're very, very welcome, Peggy. Take care. Have a fantastic 4th of July holiday weekend, you and all your crew.
All right. Thank you.
Peggy McClellan, executive producer of Lifestyle Live, syndicated from WISH-TV, the Cedar Bay Affiliate in Indianapolis by Pacific Entertainment, joining us live from that great indie city. Now time for a regular Friday feature we call the Takeaway of the Week. And usually we do it about a development that takes place during that week that we think impacts how you watch and use television down the road. But given the fact that this is not only a Friday, but the final day of June and the final day of the first half of 2023, we thought we'd make it the takeaway of 2023 at the halfway mark. And to me, it's quite simple. It is the new channel explosion. We have seen an incredible variety of new channels start already in the first 6 months of this year through smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. We have covered some of them on this program. We have covered some of the ones that will be launching the second half of this year. And if you think, there can't be any more, well, guess what happened on Wednesday when NBC Sports announced that they're launching two branded channels this summer on multi-channel bundles starting with Amazon Freevee and Xumo, owned by Comcast, the parent of NBCU. They are Golf Pass, which will be golf lessons from pros all over the country and around the world, Golf Channel created content, original series, and more, and a sports news talk service that will present a simulcast of programs like The Dan Patrick Show and original exclusive content as well. And there's much more to come. Why is this happening? Because 90% of all U.S. households now take smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. The viewership is going there. The advertising support is going there. And that's encouraging all sorts of creators, including creators of color, and the gay, lesbian, transgender community to launch new services. So it's not just the All Supermarket Sweep channel, the All Outrage Craft Presents channel, the All Bonanza channel, the whole Price is Right channel, et cetera, all reruns. A lot of it is original content or acquired content made by all sorts of creators from all over the place. And I promise you, because these smart sets and devices continue to draw audience and continue to expand to allow more channels and allow more multi-channel bundles themselves expanding, whether Xumo, Pluto TV, Tubi owned by Fox, Plex, et cetera, to expand their channel capacity in the snap of the fingers, we're going to see more of this. And as the ad dollars continue to go and go and go and grow, we're going to see much, much more. And I think down the road, we'll see regional services, we'll see interactive services, we'll see video commerce in a service capacity, and much, much more. So stay tuned. The new channel explosion is just beginning to expand, and it looks like it will be going even more second half of this year and beyond. Coming up in our final half hour, we will have a tribute to one of the most unique TV critics of all time, from Newsday, the great and late Marvin Kittman. But first, you're going to meet somebody who was one of the TV pilot makers at the recent Tribeca Festival here in New York. His pilot is called Driven. His name is David Shane. And he happens to live not far from where yours truly is broadcasting right now. You'll meet him after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogs.radio.com, twitter.com, tune.com. Together, reaching over 85 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out Chat Reel with Billy and friends. It's a special 4th of July edition this coming Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Great music and a whole lot more. Chat Reel with Billy and friends. Special Independence Day edition, that's 4th of July, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised, two-hour edition coming your way to wrap up the first half of 2023 on this June 30th. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. Welcome to those just joining us at the bottom of the hour, 82 degrees at this hour, still sunny and hazy here in the New York metro area. And our final guest today is someone who happens to live not too far away from where yours truly is, in the same neighborhood of NYC. And he's gotten famous recently for having a TV series pilot called Driven about a very unusual Uber driver. The pilot was recently shown earlier this month at the Tribeca Film Festival, now the Tribeca Festival here in NYC. And joining me from the same neighborhood of NYC, the creator of the series, or proposed series, David Shane. David, congratulations. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you for having me, Simon. I feel like we could do this with two tin cans and a long piece of string. I think we're two blocks away.
Totally understand. First of all, tell us about how you got to create Driven.
I think I was trying to write something about two people that whose ambitions outpace their talent, and how that's difficult, and how it's difficult to be in the world and trying to put something, express yourself creatively in the world when it's clapping back at you. And so that was sort of the impetus. And then I had a kind of image of a young, like, Persian woman in Lederhosen. She ended up becoming Puerto Rican because we found an actor who was Puerto Rican, and we wanted to align her ethnicity with the actual actor. But she was kind of standing outside an assisted living center, and I don't know where that image came from, or I didn't really know who she was, but I had no idea that this was the person Teddy was going to pick up that day until the moment she did, after deciding not to take her own life. So, and that's kind of it. I mean, Yari and Teddy, feel, and Sarah really to a lesser extent, but also importantly feel like people who are yearning to create something interesting. And so that's something I want to kind of tackle and absorb and deal with.
How much of this was based on your own New York living?
Well, I mean, it is set in New York. And to that degree, I think there's some shared DNA. And I feel like maybe New Yorkers share a little of that, of Teddy's aggrievement. I don't know. We're a little bit complainers. So I think that's sort of like a ripe area for comedy to kind of create some comedic frictions. I also think, that at the end of the day, it's the kind of universal story that could have been set anywhere. And in fact, it was initially set in L.A. And then for a bunch of different reasons, mostly financial and to some degree having to deal with the fact that we have this amazing cast of New York stage actors, we decided to set it here.
Mm-hmm. And now about Rebecca Henderson, she is the person who plays Teddy, the Uber driver, who gets into these different adventures.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, just an amazing, amazing actor, amazing human. I mean, I saw her in a play called Moscow Times 6 here in New York, and I just fell in love with her and, her talent and what she could. There's literally nothing she couldn't do. And in fact, she routinely, I feel like, saved me all the time on the set, and really as did the whole cast. I mean, they routinely made everything I wrote, I feel like, 10 times funnier and smarter and more dimensional than it had any right to be. But Rebecca is amazing, and in fact, we started out, usually try to start with something simple that doesn't require a lot of, emotional heavy lifting for the actors, but for like a bunch of scheduling reasons, we had to start with the scene where Teddy's about to, very possibly take her own life. And she gets that, ride request. And it's a very, obviously high stakes, tricky, complex scene for Rebecca. And so, and compounding that, I wanted the camera to be super close to her, right? And an extreme close up, because she is the most, beautifully inside out actor, like interior actor. And I want to kind of hope, see every, vibrational change on her face as she, cycles through all these complicated emotions. And I wanted to kind of leave it for uninterrupted master. So it's like a colossally dumb way to start a shoot from an actor's point of view. And, we pulled up to the set in a fucking month. Can I say, sorry for cursing. We pulled up to the set in a monsoon, like this torrential downpour, and we had very little daylight left to shoot the scene. So there was like added pressure on her, and she just from the jump, like just okay, give me a beat, and she crushed it. So yeah, she's pretty amazing. But you know, I was so grateful to find just an amazing cast all the way up and down the line, and again because they're just these incredibly beautiful, facile New York theater creatures that I, you know, that I go see in plays.
Mm-hmm. You have a question or comment for our guest this half hour, David Chain, the creator of Driven, one of the TV series pilots that was showcased earlier this month at the Tribeca Festival here in New York. Give us a call. Here's the number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers anywhere good to go, whether you're here across the country or here around the world, wherever here is, on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. And you can also use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. One of the other major characters, the person that gets the ride from our hero or heroine, mm-hmm. is played by Christy Lamont. That's Yari mm-hmm. Alvarez is the character, and she is a deaf Yoda. Now, is she deaf in real life? And were you out to, once you wrote the character, were you trying to hire, you know, to cast somebody who is deaf or hard of hearing?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Christy Lemon is amazing and is a deaf actor. You know, I actually wrote this in 2016, and I put it away largely because I didn't think we could find a deaf Persian yodeler. And I mean, as it turns out, we couldn't because she's not Persian. She's Puerto Rican, but we found her in L.A., and that's why we kind of changed the ethnicity. But she's just an astonishing actor. And it was so, like, I would never have done this had we not been able to find a deaf person for the role. Just seemed to me to be wrongheaded, right? And but also, it, like, was so critical. It was so important to me that no one felt that we were making fun of the character at all. Because if you say deaf yodeler, that almost sounds like, you know, like a bad joke. But actually, it is perfectly beautiful, convincing reasons why this character gravitates. She was sent to Middle Europe, to Switzerland for school, and she fell in love with yodeling. And in fact, the yodeling resonates, it vibrates deeply, like in the throat and in the chest. So it makes perfect sense for a deaf person to kind of feel the music, to intuit it, you know. But I will say that, like, you know, we all, there's a moment, like maybe the pivotal moment in the whole piece and the whole pilot is when Yari drops her coat and shows her lederhosen to Teddy, who is trying to extract herself from this situation. And she begins yodeling. And, you know, we were all, I kept saying to Chrissy, you yodel beautifully, you know, and Chrissy is a singer. So we gave her lessons, but I was always checking in with her. How's it going? And she's like, you know, through an interpreter, great, good, we're good. But we never really actually heard her yodel until the moment that she did it. So she, and I just respected that. She was like, I'm going to do it on set. And so we all, it was a little bit of something clinching. Down below when we were just waiting and hoping, you know, against hope that this would be a great moment. And she started yodeling, and it was so beautiful that were people on the crew was starting to tear up, and it was like really emotional. And we did it in one take, like we were said, like, we were like frantically, you know, gesturing to the camera people, to our amazing DPs, to like, go, sir. So that's why you actually, if you look at it, there's a tiny little hiccup in the camera move as we're kind of, you know, moving closer and closer to Chrissy as yodel. So she not only just had to be a great dimensional actor, but also needed to be a great, convincing yodeler. And we managed to find someone who could do both.
David, I believe we have a call, and we're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name, and where are you calling from? Hang on for a sec. Let's try it again. All right. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, my name is Mark. I'm from Montana.
Mark, great to have you. Thanks for coming on. You're on the line now with David Shane of Driven. Go ahead.
Hey, David, how are you? David, just a quick question. A lot of writers talk about, like, letting your characters go where they were naturally go and, you know, not limiting story structure and kind of giving them agency. But with Driven, what did you think about not only the pilot but beyond? Between giving your characters, which are very specific, especially when you give them introductions like, you know, Teddy wants to take her own life and Chrissy is a deaf yodeler. How do you strike a balance between giving your characters agency and still telling the story that you ultimately wanted to tell?
Well, you broke up a tiny bit, Mark, I think, but I think I got the spirit of it, which is, I think that's the age-old, like, you know, I'm sure I'm like many writers where, not to get too mystical about it, but like, you know, when it's going well, you're watching more than you're writing, right? And you feel like a vessel somehow. And so a lot of times that, you know, I write pretty unconsciously. And as I said, I didn't know, I knew I had this image of this woman in Lederhosen outside this senior citizen center, and I didn't know that that's who was going to get picked up by Teddy, who had just had a hamburger and then a gun in her mouth in her Uber car. So I think it's a constant push-pull between letting them tell you what they want to do and, you know, making them do what you need them to do. And I don't know that I ever get the equation fully right. I try.
Yeah. All right, Mark 100%. From Montana, thanks very much for making the call. And I believe in the 16 years we've been doing the show, you are our first call from Montana. So kudos to all the people out there, and thanks so much for making the call. Mark Montana, here on Tomorrow Televised. Let's hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Was Uber involved at all in making the show?
No. No, and you know, we kind of like, you know, because we really wanted to do this on our own terms, and against the very, very good advice of both my manager and my agents, I just wanted to kind of do it as much as possible by myself. So we didn't, we haven't talked to Uber and we haven't talked to the Donald Bartlemy estate yet. But we, you know, as part of, I mean, we're talking to, there's an executive I love that a very cool company that I hope to do this with, but we had to, you know, put the brakes on our admittedly like preliminary conversations because of the writer's strike. So, and I'm not complaining. I mean, I fully get that I'm one of, you know, 1,100 writers and maybe a radius of 2.5 miles or whatever whining about this. So I, you know, it's all good and worth the fight, but I do, it was one of the things that like we were going to work on. But we did shoot two backups. We shot Lyft and we shot Taxi and ride sharing, kind of a more generic one. But it's interesting you asked that question. You're the first person to ask that question. But yeah, the short answer is no, but it's too late for that.
David, when I read the description of the pilot as provided by Tribeca Festival, something that came to mind is that if this does become a series, you could see it in sort of a semi-anthology way, like programs like Route 66 and Naked City. Did that cross your mind, that if this does become a series, you'd like to have it in that mold where Rebecca's character as an Uber driver meets up with different people, different sides of the New York City melting pot from different communities?
I mean, that's dope. That's a great idea. It wasn't my idea. I did actually write all of the episodes for the first season. It is much more of like a indoor fireworks kind of thing where, where Yari insinuates herself into the Fisher home, and then her dad shows up, and then her mom shows up, and they, you know, they kind of take over Maddie's little EDM tune, her track, and try to make this video, and it goes very badly, basically bringing these families together in order to blow them up. But that is a, you know, interestingly, the second season, I wanted to put them on the road to these three generations of women in a car headed to, in Teddy's car, headed to this yodeling contest in Ohio, which has been a source of friction between Yari and her mother. And along the way, I thought, you know, it would be great if we just kept picking up different passengers, because so that is a little of the flavor of what you're talking about, but that is a really cool idea.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, the parents are played by Liza Colon and Gary Perez. How many episodes did you write, and did you direct as well as write?
So we just made the pilot, but I've written, there are five more episodes, so six episodes altogether in season one. It's kind of the, you know, the English model, which I really love. A kind of closed circuit or single, you know, whatever, one or two season arc model, which I think is great. And they're very much in all of those episodes, and they're just amazing. I mean, Liza and Gary are incredible actors. And again, just like, I mean, I think they co-founded Labyrinth with Philip Seymour Hoffman. They're great theater actors as well as, beautiful actors on screen.
Yeah. What's been the reaction from people who saw the pilot at the festival?
I mean, you know, I think it was a pretty dope reaction. It kind of like, it seemed to affect the audience in all the, you know, ways we were hoping it would. I mean, you know, festival goers are kind of cheerleaders at heart, right? Like they're maybe pre-excited. So I don't know if I can get... I can fully trust them as an impartial audience, but it went down really well. We were so excited by the reaction. The emotional gut punches were there, the laughs, the laughter was there, you know, so, and then, you know, so we were happy, and then, you know, we were drunk. So that was all good.
Incidentally, there was in the showcase presentation that your pilot was in, there was another pilot called Honeycomb, which deals with a musician character who live streams his attempt at suicide, and at the same time that his band single goes. Were you surprised that they sort of had like the same kind of idea you did, or at least the starting point as you did?
No, I mean, I think, you know, suicide ideation, but like taking your own life, that I'm sure it's like, you know, Greek stuff. It's 5th, 5th century Athens. It's certainly been this, it's, there's a reason, you know, it's life and death, like great dramatic stuff. I mean, I, you know, with me, it was very tricky because, you don't want to appear to be making fun of someone with that ideation, right? Like who's contemplating taking their own life. And so what she's doing that first scene, it's still deliberately unclear as to whether she's kind of trying it on for size or about to pull the trigger, like, but it's a tricky thing. So that's why I was so grateful to have Rebecca, because she found the laughs when she brings up the hamburger and starts eating it. And she brings the hamburger down and you think the hamburger's coming back up, but the gun comes up in its place. As the Honeycomb, I thought it was great. I really liked it. And I imagine, you know, they were just looking for themes at Tribeca. But it was really good, and I'm brain farting on the name of the main actor in it. But he's a comedian out of Boston. He's really good. I thought it was a strong program, and I was grateful for that. I'm glad. You know, it's nice to be part of a bunch of shows that are really good.
The actor, by the way, is Baron Vaughn. Who plays the has-been musician who gets a second chance with his band. And the creators of that pile, by the way, are Sam Rodin, Joseph L. Roberts, and Elisha Yago. By the way, it was very interesting that when it came time for the Tribeca Festival people to announce their awards, TV pilot category did not have any winner, or they did not give out a TV pilot winner. There were like eight pilots, overall, unscripted, unscripted, that were presented under the Tribeca Now banner, and they did not have a single award. Did anybody ask about that?
I mean, I don't think they give them for the pilots. But they, you know, and I don't know, I've been at Tribeca a couple of times with shorts, and I've been nominated and haven't won. That's a really good, that's a good question. You know, maybe just nothing was worth giving any awards out to it on their estimation. But my, but as far as I understand it, they don't do that for the TV pilots.
Personal thought, it's time. And then I'll leave it at that. So, David, again, where do we stand in terms of this becoming a series?
You know, it's a good question, right? I mean, I can't fully answer that. We were in discussions with a couple of companies, and we just had to stop them because of the writer strike. So, and I don't know where we'll be. You know, like the actors are right behind us. So, it's a really good question. I mean, we're kind of in limbo with it. You know, we always thought that if we didn't, you know, if we couldn't make it as a TV show on our own terms, then we would finish it as a feature. So that's still an option. But I don't know, and if we're kind of suspended, you know, until we're in suspended animation, until we, you know, the strikes were settled and we get back and start talking again, and hopefully there's still enthusiasm for it.
And is there a backup plan? Do you try to do another series pilot or go in a different direction?
Yeah, I mean, I'm writing something now. I mean, first I'm writing a play because later in life, like 6 years ago, like I went back to Tisch for dramatic writing and fell in love with plays. So I'm writing a play, and I'm writing also a kind of demented TV show called House Fuckers. I shouldn't have said that. I said another bad word. But there you go.
Oops, sorry. Apologize to anybody offended. Just, let our listeners out there know. We got that.
Understood. But yes, it's fun. It's about these two, like crust punk, echo traveler, squatters who, lose their squat. The squat gets bulldozed in like middle Europe, and they, I don't know if you know this, Simon, but they, like in Italy, they'll give you these, they're selling these like crumbling seaside villas for like €1. And the catch is you have to like put down, you can buy for €1, but then you have to put down like €200,000, and you have to show that in your bank account. But they understand that you'll fix it up. So these guys just grift their way into this, you know, it was effectively just like, a squat in a cool Italian villa for 2 weeks till they get, you know, found out and thrown out, and then other things happen. But I'm just trying to stay busy and keep writing. In the meantime, directing commercials.
And congratulations to all of the TV pilot makers who were showcased earlier this month at Tribeca Festival here in NYC. I also know that they have an at-home service that's available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. So do check that out if you can. And memo again to the Tribeca Festival people. Actually, two. One, have a Tribeca Now TV pilot award next year and make it an annual thing. And second, if you can, let's get a Tribeca TV Festival back up and running, especially the New York TV Festival is not happening. So you can do it. It goes. And again, congratulations to all the 2023 Tribeca Festival, Tribeca Now TV pilot makers like David Shane. David, thanks again for joining us. Great to know
you're in
the neighborhood. And all the best. And if you get the Driven to Become a Series, let's have you back on the program post-haste. It's been a pleasure.
Sounds so great. Thank you. Nice speaking with you, Simon.
You're welcome,
take care.
David. Take care. Have a great super weekend.
You too.
David Shane from Driven joining us live here in Nueva York. Yesterday, one of the best TV critics around, and he would certainly fit the Turner Classic Movies line, what a character, passed away. His name is Marvin Kittman. And for about 35 years, he was the TV critic for Newsday, the former top newspaper serving Long Island. He wrote more than 5,000 columns, and many of them were gems. If you saw Marvin Kittman, he was carried kind of, well, sort of a nebbish fat character. He really was a character. He was one of the first TV critics anywhere in the nation to be on television. In 1971, 72, he was a regular on Channel 11, WPX's 10 o'clock news, and then later he was on Channel 5's 10 o'clock news, usually on Saturday nights. He was always a lot of fun to watch. He had a great sense of humor. He had great appreciation for television. He could certainly tie things up in a line or two, and he had a wonderful passion and a lot of fun, great wit, a really terrific wit. And Marvin was not only a great writer about television, he was a great writer about history. He wrote several best-selling books about George Washington. He was nominated, by the way, for a Pulitzer Prize for his criticism on the Tube. And he was a great guest on the popular local CBS series All About TV. Marvin Kimmel is someone who I would love to have met on this program. He was the kind of person that would love being on a show like this. Just absolutely great, fun to be around, and he is now, I'm sure, at this moment, entertaining the people upstairs. Marvin Kittman, who passed away yesterday from cancer here in New York at the age of 93. I want to thank all of our guests today for being here, all of you for tuning in. Remember, we will kick off next month with episode Triple Header, starting on Wednesday, July 5th, with Nate Dapper from the new PBS series Human Footprints. He's one of the producer directors of that series. And Zach Tangeloff, the co-founder of the new programming network Mansa, coming soon to a smart TV set or device near you. And on Thursday, we'll kick things off with the executive producer of The Lincoln Lawyer on Netflix, Ross Feynman, and Moonshine, creator executive producer, new series premiering on that Friday, July 7th, on the CW, Sherry Elwood. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And anytime this holiday weekend, check us out on podcast, on all sorts of wonderful podcast sites, over 20 at last count, including Odyssey, formerly CBS Radio, Apple and Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio's Podcast Network, and the Zencaster Creator Network. And we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our show today? What's your thoughts on where TV's at and where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, however you respond. And when you do, I respond back to you in 24 hours. That's our promise, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. Now to those of Blog Talk Radio and those services program. Andy Toe is Beat Charles, General Manager. Dave Sonnenberg is Head of Content. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Everybody at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune and Radio, on podium with our website and all of our podcast affiliates, wish you and yours a fantastic, wonderful, magnificent 4th of July Independence Day weekend. Make the max of it, and then be back here with us on Wednesday, July 5th, 3 p.m. New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and all of our wonderful podcast and website affiliates. Whatever you do now and then, make it safe, make it great, make it magnificent for you and others you love. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.